It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Tonight, the cries of the passengers and loved ones just moments after it was over. They were the ones who saw it all. The gunman in Terminal 2 walking into the baggage claim and opening fire. This woman describing what she saw. One of the victims lying in a pool of blood. She was among the 5 who were killed. Other passengers and family members holding on to one another.
Shot fire and downstairs.
Lower level inside. We have a subject with gunshots in the head.
It was 12:55 p.m., the first reports, the first calls to 911. Gunfire erupting. The shooter had loaded his gun and was firing indiscriminately. Men, women, anyone in front of him. At least 8 rushed to area hospitals. The airport was put on lockdown, all exits blocked off. Some passengers stranded in planes on the tarmac with little information.
What happened here right now? I don't know what just happened here at our terminal right now.
Other planes rushing passengers off to safe zones on the tarmac. And hundreds were evacuated from inside the terminal, down stairwells, taken outside too. There were hundreds standing together. Many were sent to the perimeter of the airport, their hands in the air, as authorities swept the scene. Tonight, authorities believe the suspect, just 26 years old. Florida Senator Bill Nelson telling me on air that the suspect was carrying a military ID.
It was found on him. His name is Esteban Santiago.
Sources telling ABC News he arrived in Fort Lauderdale as a passenger, traveling from Anchorage, Alaska, through Minneapolis, then to Fort Lauderdale, legally checking his unloaded gun and separate ammunition into his baggage. After getting off the plane, a Broward County commissioner telling us he then went into a bathroom where he loaded his weapon and came out firing, stopping only when he appeared to run out of bullets, then laying on the ground until police came and arrested him.
All right, that was the ABC News report after Friday's killing at the Fort Lauderdale airport. 5 people dead and people's lives altered forever. And, of course, just, you know, ho-hum another terrorist attack in the United States. I'm saying terrorist attack because Esteban Santiago had gone into the FBI office and told them that he was being forced to fight for ISIS, and he didn't want to. And so, of course, the lead headline, as always, is he's mentally ill, he's deranged, there's some problem with him. It couldn't possibly be that he was radicalized. I don't know what the story is. Perhaps both are true, but they do not lead with the fact that it was a terrorist attack and that he is doing this on behalf of ISIS. They don't lead with that. They lead with, poor guy, mental illness. So we have an outbreak of mental illness causing people to shoot people. And in the name of ISIS, all over the country. I guess that's the FBI story. By the way, the Sun Sentinel wrote an editorial that just came out yesterday. The FBI owes better answers on Fort Lauderdale airport shooting. And it says, given that he reportedly suffered mental health problems, that he told FBI agents he was hearing voices about ISIS, and that he was held for psychiatric evaluation in Alaska just 2 months ago, how is it even possible that Esteban Santiago was allowed to fly with a gun? We'll follow up on that. I'm sure there'll be more news. Well, maybe there'll be more news about him. On the other hand, maybe there won't be, since we're not allowed to know. You know, we're allowed to think that he is. You notice they came out with his name immediately, Esteban Santiago. If his name had been Muhammad, we would still not know, except from outside sources. But they came out with that right away because, you see, all Americans, especially former military, are given to, you know, random terrorist attacks. So, I mean, at least that's what they want you to believe. So it just continues. And then we had a report. This is from the New York Times. You know that the heads of the national security agencies went to meet with Donald Trump over the issue of allegedly Russia hacking our national elections. And this is the way the New York Times reports it. President Vladimir Putin of Russia directed a vast cyber attack aimed at denying Hillary Clinton the presidency and installing Donald Trump in the Oval Office, the nation's top intelligence agency said in an extraordinary report they delivered on Friday to Mr. Trump. Now, you know I'm a skeptic about this, and for good reason, but let me just use the words of my friend. Andy McCarthy has so many qualifications. Being my friend is not very important. But let me just say what Andy says about this. He talks about this report, but he said there was a word missing from the non-classified report issued Friday, in which three intelligence agencies assessed that Russia's influence campaign targeting the 2016 U.S. presidential election. They did not include any mention of Podesta. Andy says the three intelligence agencies' report pointedly declines to tell us what specific information gives them such high confidence that they know the operation of Vladimir Putin's mind, that they plead the nature of their work does not allow for that. So he's saying they claim they know what was in Vladimir Putin's mind. The New York Times, you just heard it. He directed a vast cyber attempt aimed at denying Hillary Clinton the presidency. And Andy's saying, how do they know that? They still haven't said how they know that. They've left that out. They said, basically, Andy says, trust us. And Andy says, you have to have proven yourself trustworthy over time. Here we are talking about a community whose own analysts have complained that their superiors distort their reports for political purposes. In just the past few years, they have told us that they had high confidence that Iran suspended its nuclear weapons program in 2003, that the NSA was not collecting metadata on millions of Americans, and that Muslim Brotherhood is moderate, largely secular. We have learned that the Obama administration intentionally perpetrated a disinformation campaign, complete with a compliant media echo chamber, to sell the public on the Iran nuclear deal and the fiction that Iran's regime was moderating. We have seen U.S. intelligence and law enforcement complicit in the Obama administration's schemes to convince the public that violent extremism, not radical Islam, is the explanation for terrorist attacks, that a jihadist mass murder attack targeting soldiers about to deploy in Afghanistan was workplace violence, that Al-Qaeda had been decimated, that the threat of the ISIS JV team was exaggerated, and that the Benghazi massacre was not really a terrorist attack but a protest gone awry over an anti-Muslim video. Andy's point, of course, is how they ask us to trust them. They deliver a report without details, claiming they know all about what Putin was up to, that he did whatever he did in order to sway the election for Donald Trump, but they don't give any evidence and refuse to. That on the backs of all the nonsense they have fed us for the last however many years. I'm with Andy. I don't trust them. And I'm with Donald Trump. I don't trust them. I don't trust them. I don't trust Vladimir Putin either. But I think in this case, this is just really hard to swallow, and I don't believe it. We're going to put this article by Andy McCarthy, it's from National Review, on our Facebook page. It's called Missing from Intelligence Report, the word Podesta. And I'd like to, you know, you can have that to sort of share with your friends and read it and just see what you think. All right, well, we know that there was, I have to tell you this one too. This is related to this. You know Ben Rhodes, right? Ben is the senior advisor to the President of the United States, the current one. Ben, his title is White House National Security Advisor. He is the one that oversaw the Iran deal. He is the one we know now because we know from the WikiLeaks documents, as I recall, that they sort of orchestrated the public's acceptance, at least tried to, of the Iran deal. They wanted to create an echo chamber to mislead Congress and America. That was part of Ben Rhodes' strategy. Well, we're learning now from the Free Beacon that Ben Rhodes, the White House Deputy National Security Advisor, never got a high security clearance. He had access to all of that information. He knew information at the highest levels. He's sitting toe-to-toe with the President of the United States advising him, but he was never cleared. He was never given a clearance. And ladies and gentlemen, that is shocking. So if you think our intelligence agencies under this president are trustworthy, When they say what they say, then I have nothing more to say. I have nothing more to say. We are living in bizarre times where we have been at great danger. But, oh, listen, that reminds me of something else. While I was, I know you probably heard the show on gaslighting on Friday. If you didn't, gaslighting is that whole business of lying to people, making them think that they're going crazy. In this particular case, in the movie called Gaslight with Charles Boyer and Ingrid Bergman, he tries to make her think she's crazy because he's up to no good. He's a criminal. He's a sociopath. But much like that, we as American people have been gaslighted now for the last 8 years, told things that are not true. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Oh, the economy's great. Oh, my goodness, jobs are just coming in record numbers. Oh, you know, the lies. Gaslighting the American people, making them think they are crazy when indeed they are not. And so along with that, something else came out on Friday that you just have to hear this. Let's see. On Friday, the President of the United States was awarded the Distinguished Public Service Medal by his handpicked head of the American military, Defense Secretary Ash Carter. And remember, Ash Carter was appointed by the president, but he is the one that awarded the president the Medal for Distinguished Service. You have to hear this. Imagine, this is what I was thinking. As I was reading this, I'm imagining some terrible movie of the 50s where some guy in a skirt who's like the chief minister is saying, "Oh, great one, he's pulling out a scroll, and the great one is lying on a couch eating grapes." And so this is how I read this, and this is what it says. President Barack Obama distinguished himself as commander-in-chief of the greatest fighting force the world has ever known. From January 20, 2009 to January 20, 2017, President Obama kept our nation safe, led a strategic transition in our defense strategy, strengthened our alliances and pursued new partnerships, and laid the foundation for a force of the future that will continue to win our nation's wars. President Obama countered decisively the most imminent threat to our national security, terrorism. He directed the operation to kill Osama bin Laden, decimated al-Qaeda's terrorist network, put ISIS on a path to a lasting defeat, and developed counterterrorism platforms for South Asia to North Africa. He did so relentlessly, effectively, and increased transparency and in strict accordance with our values. You know, it goes on and on. It's like two pages. I can't read the whole thing. We should have to actually put this. We will put this on our Facebook page, too, because there's an article that sort of describes it out of, it's written by Matthew Vadim. It's called, and he titles it, "After Gutting the Military, El Presidente Obama Awards Himself Pentagon's Distinguished Public Service Medal." You have to read it. It's unbelievable. Let me go down to this part, because they even get into how marvelous it is that we have transformed the nature of our military to include homosexuals and repealing the don't ask, don't tell policy. Ash Carter talks about this in his declaration of what a fabulous commander-in-chief Obama has been. It is amazing. It is an amazing thing. I wish I could read it and we could talk about it, but we're going to put it on our Facebook page. And then the president just wrote a letter to my fellow Americans. And then he talks about what an incredible job he has done, how he took the sacred oath. And it just goes on. It's more gaslighting. It's absolute blah, 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 untruth after untruth. It is just amazing. It's amazing. And we nearly fell for it. I think that the reason people are relieved that Donald Trump is the president, it isn't so much to do with Donald Trump. It's that we've been broken free of the chains of this kind of lying. And no matter what, Donald Trump, however outrageous, I think it's a breath of fresh air to hear some blast of unguarded conversation. We need to have the freedom to speak and express ourselves. God himself would not deny us that. We serve him freely. We give our lives freely. He does not force us to be or say anything that we are not. And that's kind of the heart of God himself. All right, I have to take a break. But when we come back, big confirmation tomorrow.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 1,790 families have had their homes rebuilt because of you, the listener at American Family Radio, when you've partnered with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims to no fault of their own who lose everything to see volunteers show up and help them rebuild. 2 years ago, we started a rapid response division that goes within 72 hours and since then have gone to 15 communities across America. Would you consider becoming a part of 8 Days of Hope as we continue to look for ways to grow the ministry in 2017, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved, submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well. Please continue to pray for the ministry as we look forward to what God has in store for us. Thank you so much for your prayers, your financial support, and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
AFR urges you to support the ministry of 8 Days of Hope at 8daysofhope.com.
Hi, this is Ron Ball, and this is your Choose Greatness Minute. I was driving in a major city recently and was on a ramp onto an interstate when a car behind me began blowing his horn. I really could not go any faster or any further because of the traffic in front of me, but he continued to lay on his horn. When he finally went past me, he made a very rude and impolite gesture toward me. As he went on, I thought about his response. What has made us so angry? Why are we so difficult with one another? Why is there an epidemic of rudeness in our culture? The Bible says in Romans 12:10 that we're to love one another with brotherly love. Where is the kindness? Where is the courtesy? We need a rebirth of good manners in our society, a renewal, a re-energizing of politeness and courtesy. That is a part of greatness. Do you want to be great? Be kind, be thoughtful, be good to other people. You can learn more at choosegreatness.com. Go to choosegreatness.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. A small business owner in Oregon has a message for CNN, liberals, and Bruce Springsteen. He's had it with you people. Kevin Kerwins, the proprietor of Kevin the Geek Computer Repair Store in Lake Oswego. Kevin was especially bothered by the militant liberals who tried to burn down Portland following the 2016 presidential election. And it did not help matters when Bruce Springsteen, one of his favorite singers, suggested the president-elect appealed to un-American tendencies. But after a young man was kidnapped and tortured in Chicago, Kevin decided to hoist a giant poster on the front windows of his store. You can see the image at toddstarnes.com. Kevin said he really doesn't care if liberals are offended because he has plenty of business from conservatives. Kevin the Geek, doing his part to make America great again in Lake Oswego, Oregon. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Hey, Sandy Rios back with you. We are starting today a partnership with Mission Preborn. You know, we're getting close to the anniversary, Roe versus Wade, again, when thousands of us will go to the Capitol in March. And it's actually a wonderful time to see that there are so many Americans who still believe that life is so sacred all these many years after the Supreme Court made such a horrendous decision that abortion was legal, really, with the companion case, Doe versus Bolden, for all 9 months. Well, Mission Preborn is one of the many wonderful responses, really, to that decision. And primarily, they are in the business of providing ultrasounds to pregnancy care centers around the country. And you probably know, but if you don't, when women have these 40 ultrasounds, almost none of them ever abort their babies. When they see that little life inside of them, it's just, they realize that it truly is a little person. It's their child. And most of them just cannot bring themselves into terminating the pregnancy. It's really the right way to do things. It's a personal conviction on the part of the women that stops this. It is a tremendously effective, and so we would like to help Preborn raise money to do this. And by the way, 100% 100% of the money that you donate on this will go to preborn. It doesn't go to American Family Association. It goes to preborn to buy those ultrasounds. So here's how you do it. It's 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. By the way, $28 will provide one woman seeking an abortion a free ultrasound. So that gives you an idea. Of course, more money is, and any amount that you can give is greatly appreciated, but one woman can be helped with $28. You can also go to AFR.net if you'd rather give online. Isn't it funny? I have to tell you, when the internet first came out, I didn't think anybody would go online to do these things, and now everybody goes online. So it's AFR.net. I was wrong, with a capital W. AFR.net, or call 877-616-2396 to do your part to buy that ultrasound to save somebody's little precious baby. Well, this is a very big week in Washington. There will be lots of nominations considered this week. Senator Jeff Sessions, the nomination for Attorney General, goes up first tomorrow morning. Let's listen to this report from ABC.
Senate Republicans have put Donald Trump's cabinet picks on such a fast track, some of them haven't been fully vetted. The confirmation hearings set to begin Tuesday with the nominees for Attorney General and Homeland Security. On Wednesday, there'll be five more. This weekend, a top government ethics official warned lawmakers the pace is putting undue pressure on investigators. 8 years ago, Republican leader Mitch McConnell insisted Obama's cabinet picks be fully vetted, all background checks and financial disclosures complete before their hearings. Now, he's accusing the Democrats of sour grapes.
So all of these little procedural complaints are related to their frustration at having not only lost the White House, but having lost the Senate. I understand that, but we need to sort of grow up here and get past that.
This weekend, Trump chose former Senator Dan Coats to serve as Director of National Intelligence. Coats, a popular former protege of Vice President Dan Quayle, would replace James Clapper, the retired Air Force general who briefed the president-elect Friday on intelligence that Russian hackers sought to influence the November election. Even after that briefing, Trump didn't seem to buy that. In a tweet this weekend, Trump blamed the victim. Gross negligence by the Democratic National Committee allowed the hacking to take place. No mention of Putin at all. President Obama told George Stephanopoulos that Trump is about to learn there's a big difference between campaigning and governing.
As soon as you walk into this office after you've been sworn in, you're now in charge of the largest organization on earth. You can't manage it the way you would manage a family business.
Trump's team is confident they have the votes needed to get all of their nominees confirmed. And as for concerns that the process is being rushed, well, they say they want an administration that's ready from day one.
All right, ABC report. I have to just say the irony, you know, I just got through telling you that Ben Rhodes, who was the national security advisor to the president on the Iran deal, never got a security clearance. Oh, gee, that's not important, I don't suppose. And they're worried about these nominees. Of course we're worried. They all need to have security clearances. So did Ben Rhodes, but it wasn't important with him. And then, of course, with the president of the United States trying to tell Donald Trump that this is not like running a family business, like he would know that, like Barack Obama would know how to run a family business of billions of dollars. But I digress. My next guest has agreed to join us, and I've asked him particularly because he is from Alabama. Quinn Hillier is the contributing editor of National Review magazine. He's also the senior editor for the American Spectator. He has so many years in journalism. He's award-winning. By the way, just as an aside, he was an original executive board member of the internationally acclaimed Louisiana Coalition Against Racism and Nazism. And that will play into our discussion, because what we want to talk about is the fact that tomorrow morning, Senator Jeff Sessions will face his colleagues in a hearing in the Senate, he has to go through these hoops in order to become the Attorney General of the United States. And he is under fire in the most awesome, terrible way. Quinn Hillier joins us this morning to talk about it. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, Sandy. Glad to be with you.
How long have you known Senator Sessions?
Almost 19 years now.
And
met him in 1998, and have covered his career very, very closely since then.
Yeah, so I would say, you know, you would have covered him because you are from you're from the South, and you've done all these because you are a writer and a journalist. you've covered his actual work, and of course that's the what they're using against him. I know Senator Sessions well also, Quinn, and have tremendous admiration for him, tremendous admiration for his courage. He has stood alone on that Senate floor. I've always said he was Ted Cruz before Ted Cruz. And but you've known him a long time. Tell us, because we have not really laid this thing out, what are the attacks against him? What are they trying to do, and how are they trying to paint him?
Well, in short, they're trying to paint this good man as a racist, and they're dredging up stuff that is more than 30 years old that was highly problematic then in terms of whether or not it was accurate. He was up for federal judgeship in 1986, and they concocted these charges against him then that didn't necessarily bear scrutiny, but it was enough for Ted Kennedy and company to kill his judicial nomination. And even though he has had 30 years with a spotless record since then, including 20 years as their colleague, who they almost every one of them likes him personally, they know him, they know that he is a good man. Even with all that, now they're going back to these 30-year-old allegations, which didn't even bear scrutiny then, and using that to try to say that this man is a racist and should not be attorney general.
Quinn, let me read three headlines that caught my eye this morning. This is from CNN, and it says, Jeff Sessions faces Washington bloodsport. This is a headline from the New York Times. Jeff Sessions, the grim reaper of Alabama. And this one, the next one, also from the New York Times. What are you hiding, Jeff Sessions? So it really is, even it's amazing to me that CNN is actually admitting it is a blood sport. It is an attempt to destroy him. Quinn, why do you think they get so, they know they can't win this one because he only needs 51 votes. Why do you think that they are intent on dragging his name through the mud no matter what?
What they are trying to do is bloody him up so badly that once he becomes Attorney General and starts actually reforming the Justice Department, especially the Civil Rights Division, they can say that all of his reforms are racist, are of racist intent, and therefore discredit him and fight against his reforms, because right now the Justice Department is a hotbed of not just liberal but radical activists, and they don't want that hotbed of radical activists cleared out. So they want to discredit him before he even starts.
Yeah, let me repeat what we've said before, because J. Christian Adams has done a lot of writing, he and a couple of others, about the appointments under Eric Holder, just unbelievable appointments. The resumes of the attorneys that have been appointed to work in the Justice Department, especially in the Civil Rights Division, are actually shocking. I really do wonder if most of them could pass a background check. And I wonder if they even did. Do you know anything about that?
Well, he and Hans von Spakovsky have analyzed this. Hans is another former Justice Department official who's now with the Heritage Foundation, and they have found that every single one, repeat, every single one of the several hundred hires at the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department under Barack Obama, who were supposed to be career, meaning apolitical or non-political appointees, actually had left-wing backgrounds. They all had worked for decidedly, openly, radically sometimes left-wing organizations. Now, if you're hiring for non-political positions, for so-called career slots, you might get some people that were left-wing. You might get some people for right that were conservative. The point is, in a country that's 50-50 split, you would, by natural selection, you would get, you know, about a 50-50 split, but not in this case. They have 100% of them have all been left-wing, which means that they are improperly using liberal screening tactics to only hire liberals, even for positions that are supposed to be apolitical.
You know, let me interject. Before you joined us, I was talking about the heads of the national security, national intelligence agencies meeting with Trump, and I have pointed out and will say again, this is exactly what's happened in the intelligence agencies, too, for the last 8 years. They have become Barack Obama's intelligence agencies. No matter what anyone says, they have used their powers to wield political influence. And so it's the same thing's happening at Justice. It's happened at every agency. And that's why it really is an onerous task for any president to come in to these circumstances. So now you have the Attorney General, which arguably is the most pivotal appointment, the most influential, the position that has the ability perhaps to make the most difference apart from the president himself. In fact, Quinn, help me speculate. What do you think an Attorney General Jeff Sessions might actually do if he's allowed to do what he would do?
Well, first of all, for domestic law purposes, he would definitely enforce immigration laws. Now, that's partly the responsibility of Homeland Security as well, but when laws are actually broken, he would enforce those. But he would actually also enforce the laws and the Constitution that call for colorblind application of the law, meaning no special favors and no special hurdles for anybody of any race. Now, the left doesn't want that. I helped break this story back about 7 or 8 years ago, that the Obama Justice Department was literally, they openly said in a staff meeting twice that we will not enforce laws that do not help them get their vote, their liberal vote, out to the polls. So if they are voter fraud statutes, they will not enforce them because that would tend to keep away votes that would be cast for them. So they would look the other way for voter fraud. They also said, we will not enforce, get this, if civil rights laws are broken by black people against white victims, we will not enforce those laws because we think the civil rights laws are only supposed to protect black people.
Yeah, so that's where they're
in an open meeting.
Yes, well, I heard the report, and thank you for reporting that, Quinn. It's certainly true. That's what everyone is saying. J. Christian Adams echoing the same thing, and that I think, you know, he tried to expose what was happening in the Justice Department, especially the Civil Rights Division. I think people cannot even comprehend, Quinn, how corrupt it has become. And, you know, I want to kind of point out the people, the groups that are opposing Senator Sessions. Because it is, of course, the radical black activist groups. I'll put it that way, because it's certainly tons of black patriots who are not on this bandwagon. But it would be the leadership, the NAACP/LDF, the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, the National Council of Asian Pacific Americans, La Raza, which means the race, which is the radical leftist Hispanic organization that Luis Gutierrez is part of, that want to take back the United States territory. It's just amazing. And Al Sharpton from the National Action Network. And by the way, Al Sharpton is warning that there's going to be a season of civil disobedience if Senator Sessions is nominated to Attorney General. Quinn, they have already, I believe it's the NAACP, has already gone into Sessions' office in Alabama and disrupted. Let's take a break here. When we come back, what do you know about that? What exactly did they do? And what was the response of the current Justice Department to protect Senator Sessions in that instance? My guest is Quinn Hillier, and of course, he is a contributing editor of the National Review, senior editor of the American Spectator. He's a national treasure, and he knows Jeff Sessions well. Tomorrow, Senator Sessions goes before the committee, and it's going to be ugly. You'll hear about it. And we want you to know what you're going to be hearing and what the truth is behind the accusations. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
reporters tell the story of a new boat owner who took his prize vessel out onto a lake. But then, no matter what he did, he couldn't get his new bayliner to perform. So he puttered up to a marina. They checked everything. Then, one of the guys jumped in the water, and he came up laughing. Because under the boat, still strapped in place, was the trailer. That's a Johnny Todd. And wouldn't you say that's a case of don't miss the obvious? Well, the disciples missed the obvious after Jesus miraculously fed 4,000 on a hillside, because just hours later, they began worrying about where they were going to get bread for dinner. Gee, if Jesus fed 4,000, couldn't he easily feed his 12 followers? Friend, please don't miss the obvious today, because Jesus is the source of help and hope in every circumstance. That's a fact you just can't afford to forget.
Sandy Rios in the morning.
This is a time of madness, it really is. This is from the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. He said, evil attacks the weakest, denies truth and love, is defeated through Jesus Christ. And I just love that. Evil is defeated through Jesus Christ. And so let's not be afraid. And if you are afraid, then, you know, make yourself right with God.
Sandy Rios in the morning. Weekday mornings at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
On the next Today's Issues, we'll be joined in studio by AFR producer and weekend host Jeremy Wiggins.
The culture and the world are throwing at us left and right as men what their definition of a man is. And they're trying to get you to change who you are as a man to fit the world's definition.
Newsmen Fred Jackson and Steve Jordahl will also be in to catch us up on the news. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. 100% a perfect score. That's the rating Walmart received for their support of the LGBT agenda from the homosexual lobbying group Human Rights Campaign. HRC pressures corporations to join the LGBT parade, both literally and figuratively. In recent years, Walmart has been a sponsor of lewd-filled gay pride parades and has funded homosexual causes. But Walmart's support of the LGBT agenda doesn't stop there. The company long ago abandoned the Christian principles that Sam Walton founded Walmart upon. Yet in the minds of millions, Walmart is still viewed as a bastion of conservative values, advancing the homosexual revolution, all while stringing along the pro-family community. Walmart has made a choice, choosing to align with the LGBT agenda while shaking off their Bible Belt persona. Call Walmart and urge them to return to their founding values at 1-800-WALMART. 1-800-WALMART. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Has a head of state used his intelligence services to try to influence American elections? We're told Russia's Vladimir Putin did in 2016. It appears Barack Obama may also have used several highly politicized intelligence agencies to orchestrate a power play that could well result in the rigging of future U.S. elections. Heretofore, President Obama did virtually nothing to stop successive cyber attacks, and not just by the Russians. Only when Democrats were embarrassed by hacked emails and the chance presented to sully Donald Trump's victory did he order and make public much ballyhooed intelligence reports and sanction Russia. Worse, his administration just declared the state's election machinery critical infrastructure. That creates opportunities for future federal manipulation without precluding cyber assaults, since Washington has to date utterly failed to protect America's most critical of infrastructure, our electric grid. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Well, it's starting tomorrow morning. Senator Jeff Sessions will go before his colleagues. And some CNN is calling it blood sport. And my friend J. Christian Adams wrote an article in which he titled Pray for Jeff Sessions. You know, Christian says, feeling the full wrath of the ugly, hateful left is an experience that leaves one assured that there are no coincidences. When someone experiences the soul-wrenching lies and distortions of the sort now blasting at Mr. Sessions, it provides a reassuring context to the larger constitutional fight in which we now find ourselves engaged. There have always been enemies of individual dignity and freedom. The nastiness aimed at Mr. Sessions reminds us there always will be. The task at hand is to beat them. And that's certainly what my heart is in, is to push this back. I just hope we've reached a point where people are sick of the kinds of distortions and lies that we have been subjected to, certainly for the last 8 years. Quinn Hillier is my guest. Quinn is a contributing editor of the National Review and also the senior editor for the American Spectator, and he is from Alabama and knows Senator Sessions quite well. And Quinn, before we proceed with the rest of the discussion, what do you know about them occupying Senator Sessions' office down in Alabama?
Well, luckily, they were not violent or anything like that. They did keep their decorum, but about between 20 and 50 members of the NAACP demonstrated first outside and some of them inside Senator Sessions' local office, and about 20 of them stayed there and occupied the office, would not leave all day long, would not leave even when it was time for the building to close, and so they ended up by invitation. They literally kept saying all day, well, they'll have to arrest us to move us, they'll have to arrest us. So they were arrested and you know, brought down to jail and booked. But what they were doing was disrupting the work of Senator Sessions' staff as part of a publicity stunt. Now, let me say right off, every good American believes in the right of peaceful protest. The right of peaceful protest in a place that is appropriate for it. But when you are taking over somebody's workspace and keeping them from doing work that is especially the public's business, then that is an occupation. That's not just a protest on a public street. And that is, to my mind, at all times and in all places, illegitimate, and frankly, it's obnoxious.
It is obnoxious, Quinn, no question about it. You know, I often think when I visit the Capitol in D.C., how unprotected our senators and congressmen really are. It's kind of amazing to me. They can't have weapons in there. Their staff can't have weapons. And people can walk right in. And sometimes I think that's a disaster waiting to happen. I'm with you. I believe in protest. They should be able to protest. If they don't like him as a nominee, that's their full right. But that is a bridge too far when you go in and occupy that closed space and then you worry about safety as well. Quinn, because tomorrow is the opening hearing, and you and I both know that they've been already for weeks now. I mean, my inbox is filled with garbage about Jeff Sessions. And so they're going to, his own friends are going to come after him, some of them, the Democrats, with some specific accusations. And I think we should prepare people for what those accusations are. And one of them involves a case that he prosecuted as attorney general way back in the 80s. He prosecuted civil rights activists Albert and Evelyn Turner. What can you tell us about that?
Okay, this played a key role in defeating his judicial nomination 31 years ago, and it also was the case that there ended up being six of these NAACP officials arrested last week for this occupation. Every single one of them, when interviewed, mentioned this case first. It is their key piece of evidence, or one of two key pieces of evidence against them, and it's all utter balderdash. Here's the deal. Albert Turner was, yes, one of the big civil rights leaders. He marched with Martin Luther King across the bridge at Selma and things like that. So he ended up getting political power in rural Perry County, a majority black county in Alabama. And there were many allegations of voter fraud against him and his fellow compatriots. And Jeff Sessions, as the U.S. attorney at the time, oversaw, although it was mainly his staff, the prosecution of Albert Turner Jr. and company for voter fraud. And the left went nuts and said, well, this must be racist. How dare you accuse this civil rights icon of voter fraud? It must be racist. One big problem with that allegation. It was not a case of white against black. The people that brought the complaint against Albert Turner were also black. They were black voters who said their ballots had been improperly changed, and it was other black elected officials who were fighting for control with Albert Turner's group that was in control. So it was not white against black, it was black against black. So therefore, how could anything that Jeff Sessions or his staff have done have been racially motivated? This was not a white-on-black thing, but they keep coming back to it just because Albert Turner Sr. happened to have been a civil rights hero, so they use that to concoct this idea that Jeff Sessions had acted in a racial, in a racist manner. But here's the kicker, and I know I'm going on along, but this is the key thing. The very day after the NAACP occupation, citing this 32-year-old case, the son of Albert Turner, Albert Turner Jr., came out and endorsed Jeff Sessions. Why? Because he said he had dealt with Jeff Sessions ever since his parents were indicted, and he knows that while he disagrees with him politically, he disagrees with him on some issues, he said flat out the man is no racist. He said the man is honest, he's straightforward, he's fair-minded, and he's always going to try to do the right thing, including in his father's case where he said the local district attorney brought the evidence to Jeff Sessions' office, and he said Jeff Sessions did what any good federal prosecutor would do. He took the evidence presented to him, and he acted like a prosecutor, and he did the investigation. So if the very son of the man who was indicted says that there was no racial animus and that Jeff Sessions should be the Attorney General of the United States, why are they still bringing up this case?
Well, we know why. And by the way, just to affirm what Quinn is saying, Julia Hahn did a great piece on this in Breitbart. Son of civil rights activist tried by Jeff Sessions endorses him for Attorney General. And we'll put that on our Facebook page because you're going to hear a lot about this case. Quinn, I think in a private call where the conspirators who were trying to defeat Senator Sessions met, I think they as much, according to my sources, as admitted that the problem they have with Jeff Sessions isn't really that he's a racist. It's that they are afraid he actually will enforce voting rights laws for all people, that he wants the voting system to be fair. He's been clear about that, and that's what they don't want. This is what they don't want. You know, I read, in fact, I don't see it in front of me, but Cory Booker, who is now a senator, made some statement about, he went on about how he said if there is voter fraud and it's it helps the black community, then we should look the other way. We should consider that it's justice or something to that. He's in on record as saying that. That is the crux of it, that Jeff Sessions will actually apply the law. That's what they're afraid of, but they want to say, because that won't get much traction, they want to say he's a racist, as they do with everything. So that's the game here.
Yes. Let me give an example of how that plays out. I was one of three people simultaneously, I was at the Washington Times at the time. I, as an editorial writer, a news side reporter for the Washington Times, and Michelle Malkin all at the same time uncovered the story that a lot of your listeners will remember of the new Black Panthers sort of standing outside and threatening people outside of a Philadelphia voting booth. It was a clear, classic case of voter intimidation. They had nunchucks in their hand. They were saying racist stuff to people. They were threatening people, especially white people, who came by to vote. It was a clear case of voter intimidation, which is against the law. J. Christian Adams was actually the man, one of the several men in charge of bringing the case against the new Black Panther Party. they had, in effect, already won the case before the Bush administration left office. But when the Obama justice team came in, they dropped the charges that were already won against these violent new Black Panthers. And the reason they did is exactly what you said. They said in these private staff meetings, well, we don't enforce the law against Black perpetrators. The civil rights laws are only supposed to protect Black people, not protect other people against Black people. Black people cannot violate civil rights laws. Now, when you have violent people standing outside of a polls, then it doesn't matter whether you're Black or white, your civil rights are being violated, but not according to the radical left.
Hey, Quinn, before we run out of time, I forgot this one huge, huge thing that I have to ask you about. We only have a couple of minutes, but, you know, we would think that under the current rules, thanks to Harry Reid, since it only takes 51 votes to achieve these nominations or to approve them, we would think that we would be in, you know, doing well. But we just heard yesterday that Senator Grassley, the head of the Judiciary Committee, is now giving in to the Democrats to allow a special panel for what's described by the conservative review as a witch hunt. What do you know about that, and what's that all about?
Oh, I don't really know what's in Senator Grassley's head, because I do know that he's a supporter of Senator Sessions, but I think anytime somebody says racist, racist, you have weak Republicans who want to bend over backwards to prove that they're giving every opportunity for people to make this accusation of racism. And so what he's going to do is let people come out and repeat a lot of these discredited smears. Now, I want to say this. I want to say this very clearly. Racism is horrible. I have gotten death threats for my fight against real racists when I was fighting against, for instance, David Duke, the Ku Klux Klan leader. So nobody that is supporting Jeff Sessions is belittling real racism. But what they are doing is concocting a false charge of racism against this man. And now Senator Grassley is holding an entirely separate panel specifically on racism allegations, over and above what is usually accorded people that are opposing the nomination. And it's not fair to Jeff Sessions, but it is what it is. Sessions will endure it because the truth is on his side.
Well, that's for sure. In fact, there's so much to say. There are two that I know of, two absolutely ridiculously fabricated accusations of racism. One of them is that allegedly Jeff Sessions, he made a joke about the Ku Klux Klan, and they were doing, at the time, doing a lot of marijuana, and he said something about, you know what, now I can't remember the quote, something about,
he said, oh, well, they're doing marijuana, I used to think they were okay people until I found out that they smoked pot, and that is facetious humor. He said it at the time when he was prosecuting the leading KKK guy for murder and when he was helping break the back of the KKK in Alabama because he was cooperating with local officials and feeding them the material that caused a $7 million fine against the KKK.
And that's how ridiculous it all is. Sessions is no racist. Take Black Democrats' word for it, written by Quinn Hillier. We'll also put that on our Facebook page. Quinn, thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Sandy.
Sandy Rios in the morning.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.